This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com.
It was a case of third time lucky for AFC Wimbledon this Saturday. Yes, two previous meetings with Doncaster Rovers this season, both in the FA Cup, were put to bed yesterday with a 2-1 victory at King's Meadow. That's unbeaten in seven in all competitions at home now for the Don, and a tenth goal of the season for a certain Marcus Force. George Jones of the 9 Years podcast is here with me. And George, you can be happy. You no longer, my friend, have to do a show in your pants.
Yeah, I am very relieved about that, because for a long time it looked like it wouldn't happen. But three goals in his last two games, including a penalty yesterday and a good assist at the end, which, you know, I reckon he would have scored without the assist anyway. But it means he's on 10 goals now. And it means now that when he gets recalled by Brentford inevitably in the next few weeks, it means at least he's contributed a significant amount already this year, and will probably end the season our top goal scorer.
Really?
Yes.
If he was to leave in January, yeah, you reckon?
Yeah, if he leaves the date on January 2nd, he'll still end the season as our top scorer.
Are you giving him an assist for the final goal?
Yeah, I think you have to give him an assist for the final goal. He didn't mean to do that, but he was almost tackled by his teammate. But
yeah, Callum Riley obviously with the winner there. And I've got to say, it was third time lucky, and it was also lucky 13 as well, because if you count the seconds, which I managed to sort of haphazardly do from the handball that we'll get onto, by the way, to the time that the ball went into the back of the net, it was 13 seconds from one end of the pitch to the other.
Yeah, and scored by number 33.
There we go. Well, what's that?
Riley.
Got to do anything?
Callum Riley. Yeah.
Yeah. 33?
Yeah.
What's that got to do with 13?
And what's that got to do with third time lucky?
Well, because third time lucky, 13 is a number that is unlucky. But it wasn't unlucky. That was the lucky theme. What's 33 got to do anything?
Well, it's the fact that number three was the third in that pattern.
Okay.
You got there. Okay, you got there in the end, Matt.
I don't know. Am I being stupid there? Does that make sense? What are you saying? So 33 was the third. We'll move on, shall we?
Yeah, let's move on very quickly.
Let's move on. Crikey. George Jones at his best there. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. I could well be wrong. Let's talk about the game, buddy, because went behind, of course.
Yeah. It was one of those, again, we started poorly, we were slow out of the traps, and it was very similar to the away game against Doncaster at the Keep Moat in the Cup, of we just weren't there early doors. They got an early goal, it was from a corner, and that's becoming a worrying pattern for us now. The number of goals we're conceding from set pieces, where the same as last season with Joe McDonald in goal, this time with Nathan Trott, of teams just overloading the six-yard box. They had four players in our six-yard box from a corner when the ball was whipped in. And it's just a worrying pattern of the ball was 2-3 yards out when it was headed in at the far post. And for me, that's becoming a worrying pattern. I know you produce the Goalkeepers Union podcast, so
indeed,
I would be very interested to hear your thoughts on this.
Yeah, well, we've spoken about Nathan Trott before, haven't we? And yeah, he's a young goalkeeper. He's, how can you put it? He's not the most imposing of goalkeepers, yeah. I suppose you'd say. He's a taller, but then that falls into the cliche of that's what we want. We want the classic Peter Schmeichel, massive giant of a goalkeeper. And I do think that a lot of people just think that's what a goalkeeper should be. You don't have to be like that. Look at Matty Ryan in the Premier League with Brighton, for example. Very, very good goalkeeper. You don't need to be this massive giant of a goalkeeper these days. With regards to Nathan Trott, I would just put it down to the fact that he's still young and he's still learning. Hasn't quite got the commandment of his area down to a T yet, I think, as well. Some goalkeepers, it just does not suit their game. You saw David De Gea today against Everton. Was it a foul? Was it not a foul? Dominic Calvert-Lewin with his arm across David De Gea's face. You could argue he's impeded the goalkeeper, but at the same time, David De Gea needs to be stronger in that position. And then you can also go into the argument, which I'm no doubt we'll do on the podcast this week, whereby you say, well, you can't go on about David De Gea being more strong if it's a foul. In this case, Nathan Trott is a goalkeeper who trusts his shot stopping. Again, without wishing to be too cliche, he backs himself. So a lot of the times he won't come for crosses, he won't come for balls, because he probably feels like he doesn't need to, because he knows that he's going to be able to save them. In this instance, in League One, with a physical side like Doncaster Rovers, it's very difficult, and they probably targeted that. Darren Moore said, get on top of him, because we can see that that's a weakness.
Yeah, and I think that is the worrying pattern, though. We saw this away last year where Joe McDonald was deputising before we were able to get Aaron Ramsdale in. It was one of these situations of teams know that's our weakness and teams are able to exploit that. And the worrying thing for me is, yes, Trott's young, yes, he's developing, yes, he will improve from this. But as a lone keeper, we won't get the benefit of these experiences because he won't sort of, this won't be a problem that's fixed till he's 21, 22, 23 when he bulks up. So we won't see any benefits. And yet we're getting the weaknesses of having a young, inexperienced goalie who can't come and claim crosses, which in League One is pretty essential for a goalkeeper.
It is, but you are also getting, by the way, David, producer David, I'm extremely disappointed in you,
mate. Yeah, no, I am too as well.
There was a name that was mentioned and you didn't press the buzzer and we can't do it now. It's too late, mate. It's too late. We've gone too far. So hopefully George might slip it in again. Oh, he's going to do it anyway. You are, what I was going to say, is also getting a goalkeeper on loan from a Premier League club. So whilst you're getting him, this is the way it works, mate. You get a goalkeeper who then improves his development whilst he's on loan. He's a goalkeeper in learning at the moment and you can't be picky and choosy about that. You kind of have to appreciate the fact that West Ham have gone, yes, there you go, you can have him.
Yeah, but I just think when you're looking at goalies, I mean, we've got a really good track record with developing young goalies into, you know, better players.
So I mean, you might do that with Nathan Trott?
Yeah, no, we will. Without a doubt, he will be a great player for West Ham and probably a Premier League starter at some point in the season, or at the very least a good Championship goalkeeper. But for me, I just think maybe we need to be looking at the higher end. The goalies like George Long, like the goalie we had on loan last season. You know, the goalies were already 22 or so and have a bit more experience and a bit more physical, because in League One, you really do get punished if your goalie isn't physical enough.
OK, can we just quickly talk about the penalty from Marcus Force? Right? Yes. Great penalty. Yeah. A blatant foul, by the way, from Don Navan. Nice little link there.
Yeah.
But it looked like, and correct me if I'm wrong with this again, it looked like he did a cup of the years again and a little shush again.
Yeah.
What's this all about? Is this just a celebration and that is what it is? But it looked like he was cupping his ears. Who is he cupping his ears to?
Yeah, it's just, I think that it's right now we've got a real cohesion amongst the squad, and Glyn's been able to install it, a sort of a mentality of the world is against us, it's us against the world, we have to fight for this. He makes it, I mean, we're a team now where away fans don't like us. Whoever we're playing, they don't like the way we play. We're a bit physical, like I've mentioned on the show before. The dark arts are a bit more common in our game now than they have been at any time in the past. So our players get stick, our manager gets stick. And especially when we are where we are in the table, you can hear it very clearly, especially at home games because of our ground. And it just means that our players enjoy scoring at home and making sure the away fans know that they've conceded a goal.
Let's talk about the winner as well, because handball, not handball? Are you even bothered about it?
Right now, no, but it would be interesting if that was a Premier League game or any game with VAR, whether that would be given. Because I think if that's in the other penalty box and it's an attacking player who's controlled it with his arm like Terrell did, I think it's probably going to go as a free kick. Mm. It's just, can you give a penalty for it? Because it wasn't deliberate. I don't think there's any argument that it was. But his hand was away from his body. Personally, I don't think you can give penalties for them, because otherwise any time there's a shot or a cross in the penalty area, you'll be given penalties all the time.
Mm.
So I think we got away with one potentially, but it's a part of the game that really I think needs changing, because I don't think you should be giving penalties for them anyway.
Okay, let's move to certain individuals as well. I saw Rod McDonald back in the starting lineup. Good to see him.
Yeah, no, he's been out for a very long time. He came back in just in the nick of time with Paul Kalambai unavailable, with Scott Wagstaff out injured. We really needed Rod back, and he came back in time. He played well. He had a really good game, and he showed us what we've been missing without him, of just the control, the level-headedness, and a bit of experience playing at centre-back, which we haven't really had without Will Nightingale. And it's something that, with a left-footer like Rod on the left of the three, we have Luke O'Neill playing on the right, it just means that we've got a bit more creativity in our back three now, which means that Paul Osu and Scott Wagstaff normally, but it was Shane McLaughlin yesterday, can focus a bit more on their attacking duties as wing-backs, rather than worrying constantly about having to make sure they're tracking back and making sure that we're solid as a unit. Because we've got now got, when everyone's fully fit, we've got probably at least 5 League One standard centre-halves, which for a side where we are in the league, that is a really good feat. And hopefully in the second half of the season, that will come good.
And another player I'm sure you were delighted to see get his league debut yesterday, Jack Rudoni.
Yeah, Jack Rudoni came off the bench for his league debut. He's a player who I've been raving about for a couple of years now. He's a very, very good player. He's a creative midfield. He doesn't mind doing the ugly stuff in midfield as well. I think he's a big future for us. Personally, I think he's not a million miles away from deserving to be in a starting 11 right now for us. But I think second half of second half of the season and certainly next year, he's going to be a very, very big player for us. And also I mentioned for Hussein Belair, who was in his first match day senior squad for us. And he's another player who a lot of our fans may not have heard of, but I think his attitude's right. He's the sort of player Wimbledon fans love. And that's, I can see big things for him at our club in the next couple of years.
Yeah, sure. And some big results yesterday as well in League One. Important for AFC Wimbledon to get the win, of course. Tranmere losing away at Lincoln. MK getting that first victory in 13 as well. Southend just cannot get that home win. And Roots Hall, can they? And Bolton, of course, with another defeat.
Yeah. And that's the thing. I mean, there was a time when it was 1-1. We were sitting back. We were dropping deep before we got the goal on the counter. And just before the shot came in that hit Thomas's arms, I turned to the guy sitting next to me and I said, we have to hold on here. Results are going against us. We need to hang on. Went straight down the other end and scored a winner. So it's one of those where yesterday was so important. And I mean, we go into today 3 points clear. We're 3 points clear at the moment. Had that shot deflected in, or had that shot that hit Thomas been given as a penalty and they'd scored, we'd be on level points with the relegation zone. Whereas now we're 3 points clear. We've got another team in the bottom sort of relegation zone. Next Saturday, we could go into Christmas 6 points clear of the bottom three. And psychologically, that could be huge.
Yep, it is those sliding doors moments, mate. Just ask Gwyneth Paltrow, by the way, about that. She knows a lot about that. Another man, I'm sure, who's seen that film as well is Glenn Hodges. Here's what he had to say after the game yesterday.
Brilliant. It was obviously the old cliche, game of two halves. We wasn't at the races first half, and quite fortunate to come in 1-0 down. You know, they could have maybe got one or two more, and we felt that we was under the cosh. But you know, once we sorted things out at half time, there's a different team went out there and showed exactly what we're about, and to come back. And I don't know what the last time we came back from 1-0 down or from goals down. So it was brilliant, and got away just for all. You know, you're looking around and you sprinkle with a few younger ones, and you're looking for the ones who've played before and played a few games under the belt and a bit more experience, and you need them to come to the fore. And I thought they did. They all did today. And I mean, you know, to Callum, his performance was fantastic, and to cap it with a goal he got and the run he made from the edge of our D to get in the box to finish, you know, show the determination and attitude that he has, and an example for everybody in the team. Mm-hmm. We didn't do what we set out to do. We didn't do what we set out to do over the months we've been in charge, and the way the fundamentals, the way we defend, and the shape and the distances between the back, the midfield, and the front weren't right, and it was just I don't know whether it was a bit caught off because of the late, you know, the injuries yesterday to Paul Calabria, the injury to Waggy on Thursday. I think, I don't know, that affected them, but it was just something that we luckily got to half time at 1-0, only 1-0 down, and could address them. And then they took it all on board and delivered with the two goals and the win second half. And I think, listen, I mean, you're in this league and you're playing against good teams, and you're not going to have 90. You're not going to dominate the game. You're going to have 90 minutes. Teams are going to have possession and attacks against you. And I felt the last 3 or 4 minutes, if we'd have defended like that as we did last week, we'd have had another 2 points on the board, I think. But you know, it's the good football is not just about passing and crop circles and back heels. It's sometimes defending crosses like Terrell at the end, putting his head in, Luke putting his head in, you know, bodies putting blocks in. So there's all sorts of something. You know, you're not going to win a game when you're 100% in your favour, no game. So you know, we know that teams are going to come on top, and we're forever working on that. But you know, it's just getting the win and scoring two goals and winning is brilliant at the end of the day.
We've got a Christmas party tonight, so that is even better. So, but I mean, I'm still in the back of my mind, I still think there's two. You know, we could have had an extra 2 points. That could have been a 9 point. You know, the last three games, that could have been 9 points. But you know, it's over and done with. We learned from it. We learned a little bit today when Pigs got in the corner the last 3 or 4 minutes to try. You know, this is something that we've looked at, we spoke about. So you know, like I said in my program notes, we're improving, and I'm happy with the improvement we're showing. I know Waggy won't be maybe not available for the Christmas period, and also PK. So you know, I think that they ban weeks about a number of weeks, but you know, it depends on the symptoms. It depends on the boys. Some are quick healers, some are others. We just hope that they're back fully fit to add to the squad. Rudy's come on today and showed good energy, so he's another one who made his debut. We had Hussein and Zach, who we really thought about putting them on, but again, to get the job over the line, you know, we've got to be careful. We don't go too young, but they're learning, and they're all part of it in that dressing room. They're soaking it all in, and then it's a learning curve for us all.
For the fans, by the fans, Love Sport Radio.
The FC Wimbledon Fans Show here on Love Sport. Me, Matt Beadle, joined by George Jones, as ever, from the 9 Years podcast. Just quickly before we move on, you've never seen the film Sliding Doors, right?
No.
Can't believe that, mate. Get home, watch it tonight. It's a good one.
What year did it come out?
I'm going to say 1997, 78, around 98.
I was born in 97, just for a bit of context.
Oh, okay. My bad. Well, you know, it's a classic, so you can watch it again. Good film. Anyhow, we shall move on to hearing from Glyn. There, before, someone was sweeping behind him. Who was it? Was it a player?
I hope not.
What was all that about? Was it just during the end of the game?
Yeah, it was just at the end of the game. They classic. Filmed it inside where someone was sweeping. So, who knows?
But you noticed something about his comments, and more so Darren Moore's comments after the game.
Darren Moore came out with a beautiful managerial comment saying, had we not conceded two goals, we would have won the game. Which I just think that's such a perfect managerial comment. You wonder how he's not working in the Premier League anymore.
Oh, a harsh dig there from George Jones. Right, we are going to move on now. Got a caller. James in York wants to join the conversation. You want to talk about what Glyn can do in January with the financial situation, James?
Yeah, good evening, gents. From a pretty brisk and drizzly Yorkshire.
I bet it's cold up there, isn't it?
Yeah, it's getting that way, and I suppose it should be like that when it's sort of December. But yeah, I know down in the capital it seems to be a bit warmer at times than up here. But yeah, I just wanted to. I've been listening for quite a few weeks, and you know the ins and outs of social media about, you know, the state of the club at the moment, and I just wanted to discuss with you, you know, just how hard it's going to be for Glyn come January to, with I'm sure George knows, with a strong possibility of young Fors going back. I mean, since he's taken over, I feel that he's done a fantastic job, and I think that with the resources sort of handed to him, if you like, I mean, he's picked up the team that Wally had, and you know, there's been some good performances picked out, and I think we all, as Wimbledon fans, you know, have been very frustrated. I, for one, people that know me have, you know, I've been more vocal than others, and maybe that's got me in a bit of red water at times, and that's just the way it is. I'm not one for snowflaking, you know. I care passionately about AFC Wimbledon. I've always supported them through thick and thin, and at times, you know, I just think that the club's been horrendously run from the back, you know, at the board, and I watched a bit of the recent, I think the podcast, I think George might have been involved in that, with regards to the meeting, and I was just so frustrated watching it, thinking, you know, regards to the, you know, the possible money being put in from an outside partner, whatever, you know, investment, and I just thought, this has been on the cards, gents. This has been on the cards for, I would say, 4 or 5 years, if not more.
Yeah, well, going back to the first comment about January recruitment, it's going to be incredibly tough for us this January. I don't think anyone sort of quite understands how tough it's going to be because we've got no money. It was mentioned at the Meet the Manager a month or so ago where anyone who comes in will have to be a loan deal. Like you said, Marcus Force will be going back. I think there's a possibility we could lose Ryan Delaney and Max Sanders as well. And with West Ham's goalkeeping situation, who knows where Nathan Trott is in their thoughts at the moment. So really, we might have to end up rebuilding the spine of a team for no money in January, which is why I think it's...
Have you got it on absolutely good authority, or are you just on the rumours that Fors is definitely going back, or are we all thinking, you know, using a bit of nous that is going to happen because he's on such great form?
He's on great form. Brentford's manager came out this week, said they've got 3 strikers on loan. 2 of them are coming back. It's hard to believe one of them isn't going to be Marcus Force. And just also the way Glyn spoke at the Meet the Manager meeting a month or so ago, I'd be very surprised if end of January Marcus Force is still with us.
Yeah.
I think Max Sanders, who's out of contract at Brighton at the end of the season, I think he might be going back. I think Ryan Delaney's loan deal might be up as well, but don't quote me on that. But I think this is a situation where we're going to have a very hard job rebuilding in January, and it's so important, you know, we get it right.
It is, and it's almost, you think to yourself, you know, let's be realistic. You know, Glyn's taken the job on, and he's taking it on. He's getting, you know, I don't know what he's getting paid, but he's getting a wage from it. And he's wanting to progress. You know, this probably is, I think he was caretaker manager at Barnet, I forget, but this is his main first gig. And, you know, I don't blame him for taking it. However, you know, if you look at the situation he's been dealt, and then not to mention Wally too much, but I'm saying what they've been dealt, you have to go back to before when Eric was at the club, and there was overspending with Neil Ardley's budget on the. I mean, crikey, I start shaking when I think of the players that he launched money at, and people jump on the bandwagon when you mention that and say, you're just putting the dampeners on it and you're scaremongering. No, these are raw facts in running AFC Wimbledon the wrong way. You know, there was umpteen amounts of times where there was warnings in, I think it was the second, if not third season that Ardley was in charge, when I rubbed shoulders with Eric, I think it was Tranmere away, and I remember, I think it was Bayo, Akinfenwa scored either an equaliser, we got away with it that day, I'm sure we did, and he'd said hello to me, and I said, Eric, we've really got to learn by our mistakes next year, we've really got to, we've got to learn.
Yeah, I think we have, and I think that's something a lot of the wider fan base is, just understanding now, looking at the situation and reading through what the Don Trust have published over the last couple of weeks. I think people are understanding this is an issue that goes right back to sort of, effectively, this issue first arose in our promotion season in 2015-16. The last 4 years or so have been issues going back and overspending to try and get into League One and sustain League One. And I think people are only just now questioning whether that was the right way to go, or would we have been better off being a stable League Two club going into the new stadium?
No, well, I don't mean to take me the wrong way. I feel that that money had to be spent to a certain, and I was certainly in that camp of, we have to pay some quality wages to get that quality in to have a bash at getting out of League Two. And of course, I think a combination of taking a few risks, if you like, on Lyle Taylors and others, and it really paid off. I mean, it really paid off. And I just feel that once we got into League One, that first season of the unknown, and then it was writing on the wall of same boring tactics, players that in many of players that I know. Not quoting any names, would say that there was a divide in the changing room, and we stayed up. Was it Doncaster Way, the Keep Moat Center? I remember being there. We stayed up by the absolute skin of our teeth. Now, then Wally came in after a diabolical run of results for Neil Ardley, and he had to go. And we clung on too long. Okay, that's my opinion. We clung on too long to Neil, and. That nearly cost us. And then, I just feel it very harsh that Glyn and Wally haven't been sort of given this anywhere near the support financially. You say the money's not there, but they've just not had any of... They've just had to pick up the pieces. Now is the time, in my opinion, that, there has to be a reshuffle of the board. There must be people on that board that have sat there for... You probably know the figures and the years that have been on it. We have to move forward as a club, we have to get a rejig. Yes, Joe Palmer's come in, never met him, don't know him personally, but he's come in and I've heard he's working tirelessly in the background. But the front of it, from Glyn to his youth team coaches, etc., there has to be a big shake-up for us to, in my opinion, with a bit of luck, we'll stay up. But from where I'm standing now, I'm looking at what you've said tonight, gents, and the fact that Glyn will probably have to completely, maybe four or five players bring in January on loans. I don't know, it's going to be a massive task for him. Huge.
Yep. James, thank you very much for that call. Really appreciate you coming on this evening, buddy. That was James from York there. An emotive call, that one, George. I tell you, it's good. It's good to get calls like that because you want to hear what the fans are thinking. And, not all fans do think the same. This is a very sensitive issue at the moment. And if you want to get in touch with us, very easy to do so. 0208 7020 558. You can WhatsApp us on that number as well. Or tweet us at Love Sport Radio. Now, George, there was a meeting on Monday, of course. We spoke about it at length last week. We are going to get into that and plenty more on this, the AFC Wimbledon Fan Show here on Love Sport.
From Ali to Zaha, we've got it covered. Love Sport Radio.
AFC Wimbledon fan show here on Love Sport. Me, Matt Beadle, with George Jones from the 9 Years podcast. Now, George, you and plenty of other fans got together at King's Meadow on Monday. Of course, we spoke about this at length last week. It was a Don's Trust board meeting regarding the future of the club and where you go and all the questions and answers, I suppose, raised from the open letter. So let's get into it. The key points.
Yeah, it was mainly a discussion around the responses to the open letter, because the open letter, I felt it at the time it was sent in, it's been so important to getting as much information out as quickly as we can, which is absolutely the right way to do this, because if the Don's Trust are going to rush us to make this decision, we need all of the information as early as possible to make sure that it's the correct decision whichever way it goes, and that we're all informed when we vote. And Monday was the latest step. It was the first chance everyone had to get together since the announcement was made that this situation had arose. And it was a good turnout on the night. We, the 9 Years podcast, did a live stream of the meetings, and the viewing figures were good there. And it was a solid meeting. I think most people who wanted to say something were able to say it. And really, it was a good chance for everyone to just say what they wanted to say, and for everyone to understand where everyone else was in terms of their thinking along the lines of, do we have to sell out our own club?
Okay, so the key points that came out of that then, of course, we spoke at length about, I mean, everything that we discussed last week, in terms of the funding shortfall, of course, the fact that the club could service that loan, you mentioned that, the withdrawing money people might do, the new stadium total costs. I mean, what stuck out for you?
For me, I think the main thing that for a lot of people is it only just sunk in that it's 11 million quid that we're short. And one of the main positives that I think came out of the meeting was the number of fans who came up with genuinely realistic ways that we could raise sizable amounts of money. None of them on their own will get anywhere near 11 million, but each of them could raise sort of 2 million or a million here and there. And together, we could get up to that level of the 5 to 7 million shortfall range, which the Don's Trust themselves have said is a serviceable loan amount, which they think is realistic. So I think the main thing that came out of that meeting was, it's not over, that there might be a way we could get the funding in place without having to sell our club, which going into the meeting, not a lot of people thought there was.
What was the atmosphere like, George? Because like you said, this was the first time that everybody had been able to get together, finally, for this meeting, and everybody thought this is going to be a long meeting, lots of coffee, lots of going into a dark night discussing the future of the football club. Was the atmosphere friendly? Was it tense? Was it nervous?
It started just tense. So it was so tense. When we started about 7:30, the meeting, the room itself, you could feel the nervous energy in there. And then 3.5 hours later, as the meeting was still going on, it was just starting to turn a bit more. There was a bit more edgy in the room, a bit more aggressive, as it was clear. By that point in the evening, everyone had made up their mind on what they thought was the only way forward for us. And I genuinely think both sides think their way is the only way for our club to continue. And it was clear as the meeting had gone on, those sides had formed. You've got people who are very well respected, who spoke very well at the meeting. People like Chris Stewart, who was our sort of founding father of the club, effectively, who came in. He spoke very well. It's the first time he's spoken at a Don's Trust meeting for a very long time. You had other fans like Eric Samuelson, who's our former CEO, who was mentioned a bit in our last call, who was in charge when some of the problems that have led to this came up. And he spoke in favour of selling out our club, which a lot of people didn't expect him to do. There was an unofficial showing of hands towards the end, which I found very, very interesting.
Go on.
And we didn't show... I should say, on behalf of the 9 Years podcast, we didn't show the actual show of hands, but we showed what the chair said the result was. There was a bit of disagreement in the room to the actual number, but personally,
You've got disagreement in the room about the number of hands that are being shown.
Yes.
That doesn't bode well for the future.
No, it really doesn't bode well to how we're going to get through any of this. But personally, I would say 65% of people in the room, somewhere between 60 and 65% of people in the room, voted in favour of staying fan-owned. And for me, I think that means that it's a lot more than, even though that's only a smallish proportion of the total Don's Trust membership, I think it's still a significant amount that will mean that they won't get 75% in favour of voting to sell our club. Which means, I think, realistically, now all of those options, which were sort of the people like some people on the Donnchadh board seemed almost reluctant to look into, like a bond issue or something along those lines, which the board seemed reluctant to look into. I think they're now really seriously looking into them and other sources of loaning and financing. Because I think the main point from the meeting is, I don't think we would get anywhere near the 75% to sell, which for me is a very good thing, because I think that would be the worst decision the club has made since we reformed.
You often talk about budget, to the chagrin of many, many listeners, of course. But the 2.8 million, did that come up?
Yeah, it came up, and I know James mentioned it in his call, of the fact that a large amount of money, which was put aside as effectively reserve in case this exact situation arose, has been spent on playing budget over the last two or three seasons. And I think people knew about this, it was in the open letter response, but it occurred to people on the night, some of the players that money has been spent on. And I think that stings. You look at players who are no longer at the club, or one who still is at the club, you look at the money they've earned from the club, and you look at this funding shortfall, and you look, has having those players jeopardised our future as a fan-owned club or plough loan project? And I think it's dawning on people now that this is something that next to no attention was paid to. The Donnchadh Trust really weren't even, the membership weren't even really notified or informed of this decision. It was just slipped into the minute of one meeting that the Donnchadh Trust board had approved Eric Samuelson's request to increase the playing budget out of the stadium money. And I think a lot of people are now sort of looking at that decision and questioning whether it is the right thing to do after all.
Which player that's still at the club, mate? Which is the one you're not happy about?
No, I don't think anyone needs to know that. I don't think anyone... I think we all know we're all very happy with all of the players at our clubs. None of them have a history of injuries or are currently out injured for a significant period of time as one of our highest earners. There is no player that fits that criteria at our club.
We'll move swiftly on. Soon to appear, of course, on the AFC Wimbledon Fan Show. Can't wait for that day. That's going to be an exciting, exciting hour ahead. Regards the investors, any more information given?
No, and that was the thing that a lot of people weren't happy about, is the fact that this has been going on for nearly 3 weeks now since this was first raised, and we still haven't been told the names of the investors. And this is now one of those things of, yeah, fair enough at the time, let's wait and see. But after that meeting, when it was clear that maybe a majority were not in favour of this, if they had nothing to hide, would they then come out and say, do you know what, we're honest people, this is what we believe, this is what we want to do, you know, vote for us. The fact that they haven't come out yet is making a couple of people start to think, maybe they think if they did identify themselves, more people would vote against it. Mm. And for me, I think unless we know who they are, we have to assume the worst case scenario. Because as far as I'm concerned, if they were the type of owner like Andy Holt is at Accrington, who's, you know, a brilliant owner who I wouldn't mind having at our club in terms of his ideology and his the way he behaves and budgets responsibly, the more you don't hear from them, the more you think they're more likely to be like the Venkies or the Oystons or any other number of groups who have ruined a club for generations to come because they had a pipe dream and they weren't realistic.
How would you feel about a Joe Seeley?
What club's he at?
Joe Seeley is on the verge of potentially buying out Macclesfield. He's currently in negotiations. They've stalled around since November. He thought he was quite confident. Son of Les Seeley, of course, the ex-goalkeeper. And he believes that he's very close to completing the deal. But a southern lad, a decent lad, seems very open, seems very honest, just has the club's interests at heart.
And that's the thing. You do need owners who they're not interested in it for themselves, their family or their own business. They want that club to, when they leave that club or pass it on, they want the club to be in a better state than when they got it. Like I mentioned him earlier, Andy Holt, Accrington. You look at the state that club was in when he came in and you look at where it is now. It is important to stress there are good owners out there, but from where I am, there are more bad owners than good owners. And that is one of the main reasons I think we cannot afford to sell our club.
This cloak and dagger aspect as well really aggravates me. It has done recently when you think about the fact that, yes, people argue football isn't just all about the fans. Well, it's a big chunk of it, and especially with AFC Wimbledon. And the fact that you've not been privy to that information at such a crucial time in the club's future, for me, is a disgrace. And it buys into, and this is not as much of a serious point, but Marcus Force. Yes, Thomas Frank has come out and said, we've got three strikers in line, we're going to recall two of them. we still don't know who they are. And actually spoke to a Swindon fan yesterday who was on our League Two post-match fan show, and he said, yeah, it's great that Owen Doyle scored in 9 successive games now. He's got 19 goals this season. That's brilliant. But he's on loan from Bradford, and we don't know what's happening. Swindon have remained tight-lipped. Bradford have remained tight-lipped. No one knows if he's going back in January, so it's kind of tainting it, which is what it's doing with Marcus Force as well. And the fact that you're not being given information on these investors is ridiculous.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things of the fact there isn't enough transparency at any club. I mean, for example, even at AFC Wimbledon, which in the recent survey they got published, you might have seen it, where it was basically writing about how open and how transparent every football league club is. We were near the top of that, and we don't know how long our players' contracts are. And for something like that, for a club like us, that's, in my opinion, we should know how long we've got a player contracted for. Or at the very least, is it a 1 year or a multi-year? We don't even get told that. But in terms of not getting told the owners are, I know what people are going to say, and always confidential, and they want to sort of, they want to think of themselves as, if this gets rejected, they want to be able to hold their heads up high, which they claim they wouldn't be able to do if they come forward. But as far as I'm concerned, if they're not coming forward, then there's no chance this would happen. And if they wanted to convince people they're good, honest people who have the best interests of the club at heart, Monday would have been a perfect opportunity for people to look them in the eye while they try and explain to us what they want to do with our club. And the fact they haven't done that makes me question their motives.
Yeah, very good point. What were the numbers like, by the way?
In terms of at the meeting, it was probably about 400 in the room, and we had very good numbers online.
Okay. And where are you at now, George, with everything that's going on? There is another meeting coming up?
Yeah, there is another meeting, which isn't just for Donch Trust members. It's for all fans. Anyone can turn up. That's on Monday night in Wimbledon. The Donch Trust have published full information for that. And they've also published the slideshow that was shown to fans on Monday night. That is on the Donch Trust website. Well worth a look if you haven't been to the meeting or watched the live stream yet. Just try and get informed about this. In terms of where I sit personally on this, I am more convinced now than I ever have been that we cannot sell our club, certainly not right now, with the sort of opportunistic investors who no one has met and we don't know who they are. The fact they've just come in, the club said we approached them before the Cedars fundraising campaign to see if they would invest money in that, and the fact they haven't makes me think they're just opportunistic and wanted to take advantage of us when we're at our weakest. And that's not someone who has the best interests of the club at their heart.
Okay, and just before we move on from this one, where are we at as well in terms of timeframes from now on?
In timeframes, we're looking at probably, it hasn't been confirmed yet, but you have to assume this will have to go to a vote, which the Don Trust have said if this proceeds, it will.
Hopefully not a hand-raising vote.
Yeah, hopefully not a hand-raising vote. But the trust have effectively confirmed that this is going to have to go to a restricted action if they think it will even have a chance of passing. And realistically, you're looking at probably early to mid-January for the first vote, and there will probably have to be two votes on this.
Okay. Well, what do you think? As always, let us know, 0208 7020 558. You can WhatsApp us on that number as well, or tweet us at Love Sport Radio. It's the AFC Wimbledon Fan Show. Next up, we've got the trusty George Jones Academy and Development Squad update. Plus, we will be looking ahead to that game with Tranmere.
Giving your team a voice, Love Sport Radio.
This is the AFC Wimbledon Fan Show here on Love Sport. Me, Matt Beadle, with George Jones of the 9 Years podcast. Right, George, we are going to move on now to an academy and development squad update. Hit me.
Well, this week on Tuesday night, we played Cray Valley Paper Mills in the highly established London Senior Cup. And it was actually a really good game. We had a very, very young team out. We ran out 4-3 winners. But we did have two 16-year-olds playing against Cray Valley's first team. And they had Gavin Tamlin playing for them up front, who, you know, has played for obviously Gillingham and Southend. And he was up against one of our 16-year-old centre-backs. And I think that experience will just be so important for them. And there'll be loads to come from them. They've got a tie. We'll be playing Brentford in the next round. So it'll be a good opportunity to test ourselves against Brentford's reserve team, which was highly established and highly ranked pretty much everywhere in Europe. And it was a young team. It was a good game. Not the best conditions, but we ran out winners. And the game will always be remembered for those of us there by us scoring directly from a corner.
No.
Yes. Well, technically it was directly from a corner.
What do you mean technically?
Crossed in, goalkeeper seemed to catch it, and as he caught it, he was jumping backwards and ended up in his own net. So I think Finlay McNabb is going to claim that one. However...
Probably an own goal.
it will probably be classed by the London FA as an own goal, but who counts at these games? So Finlay's claiming it, so...
Nice. Okay, by the way, just before we move on, we did have a text that was delivered to us via telephone, as in landline telephone, after the show, following the question about teams with two double L's in their name. And I'm surprised we didn't think of it, to be fair. And I can't remember the exact full name, whether it was City, United or Town, but Llanelli, of course, from Wales, double L's. Yeah. So there we go.
As someone who's half Welsh, I probably should have got that.
You should have got that, George Jones.
Yes, I'm disappointed in that for not getting that.
That is poor from
big,
you, mate.
Big shout out to whoever got that.
Yeah, very impressive. Unfortunately, didn't leave a name. It was. Have you ever done that where you've accidentally texted a landline phone?
Yeah.
And then the landline reads out the text message?
Yeah. Yeah, and that's... Everyone's done that at least once.
Right, moving on, George.
Yes, it was one of those things, the under-18s... They've got a huge game on Tuesday against Sheffield United in the FA Youth Cup at Bramall Lane. And from the club are running a supporters coach to it. And I think that just shows you, as a club, how much we value our academy. The fact that we're travelling in such large numbers to an under-18s game in Sheffield on Tuesday night. The winners will play Fulham. So if we can go up there, if we can get a result, it would be so important for us, especially with what's going on around the club right now, to inject a bit of positivity around the place. And I think it's an opportunity. I think it's a winnable tie. I think we've got the best under-18s we've had in a very, very long time right now. And like I said, I can see us going up there and getting a result. So I can't stress this enough. If you live in that neck of the woods or if you've got a bit of time on Tuesday, get up, go up to Bramall Lane, 7 p.m. kickoff. Let's try and get a crowd to support our boys to hopefully another FA Cup shock for our under-18s.
Yeah, absolutely. And also a clash with Brentford
coming up. That is in the London Senior Cup, which I did mention. We've got Brentford at home in the after we beat Cray Valley on Tuesday. So it'll be an opportunity for us to test ourselves against Brentford B, which are very highly thought of. They've played a lot of very highly ranked European teams in their setup. It's very unusual, their setup they've got over there. But it'll be a good opportunity for our kids to test themselves against strong opposition at either Kings Meadow, potentially if we're able to switch it, at Griffin Park.
What's the crack with the final of the London Senior Cup? Is that played at a neutral venue?
Yes, all of the Senior Cups are played at a neutral venue. Sadly, we don't get a day out at Wembley if we get to the final.
Do you know where this one will be? Is it decided yet?
It's not decided yet, but it normally ends up at the Met Police or Hendon or somewhere like that. Mm. Nowhere exciting, sadly.
All the big ones.
Yes.
All the big ones. Okay, George, let's move on to what will be a crucial League One clash next week away to Tranmere. Like we said, they lost yesterday away to Lincoln. Two successive wins for Lincoln now under Michael Apperton. They did struggle, of course, to gain a bit of momentum after the Cowleys left, but they look to be returning to form. Tranmere, however, equal on points with another team in that relegation zone, of which you are 3 points clear of.
Yeah, I think it's one of those games for us where, like I said, we're going into it. It's a six-pointer, which sounds mad considering we're in December. But we win that, we're 6 points clear of the bottom three going into Christmas. And I think that is so important for us in terms of our momentum, our energy. Tranmere are on a poor run of form. They've only won one of their last seven games, I think it is. They haven't won at home since September. And it's one of those games where you look at this, you look at the running we've got after this in terms of the Bristol Rovers game on Boxing Day. Oxford at home, then Southend at home on New Year's Day. If we can get 7 points off this run, it puts us in a very, very good position to try and get a bit further away from the bottom three, try and get a bit of momentum going into the new year. Because like we've mentioned, January is going to be very tough for us. So we need as many points as we can, as quickly as we can, to give us a bit of breathing room into the second half of the season.
Yeah, absolutely. The festive fixtures are coming thick and fast. Like you said, it's Tranmere, then away to Bristol Rovers, although you don't know what kind of state they're going to be in. Of course, Graham Cloughton yesterday speaking about his future at the club, potentially linked with the Mansfield job, thinks he can't really take it any further. Yes, he lives up north, so I can understand his reasons with regards to personal reasons, but that came as a bolt out of the blue yesterday for Bristol Rovers, of course, getting a win at Ipswich Town. Oxford, their unbeaten run has ended now, not in form in recent weeks, but plagued by injury, of course, and have had one eye on that clash with Man City, of course, in the Carabao Cup. However, by the time they get round to playing you, they may well already be out of that competition. And then Southend, like you said, New Year's Day, a new start potentially for Southend, because that horrendous run of not winning a single game at Roots Hall in the entirety of 2019.
Yeah, I think it's one of those where you don't know what shape teams are going to be in with injuries over Christmas, because they will play a big role. I know Waggy missed the game yesterday with injury. He was spotted at the sort of kids' Christmas party the club hosts every year. He was spotted wearing a boot on his foot today. So we've got to assume he's unavailable for this run. And for me, he's a big, big miss for us. But I think we've got an opportunity potentially to blood some young players, like Hussein Belair was on the bench. I forgot to mention during the academy update, congratulations to Leo Castledine, son of former Wimbledon player Stuart Castledine, who made his England under-15s debut today.
And excellent.
That just shows how well our academy are doing. To get this many, pretty much every international break, we've got a player playing. You know, from our academy into an England age group, I think we've got players representing England at every age group, from or either current or former academy player, from under-15s up to under-21s at the moment. Mm. And that just shows you how well our academy are doing. And it'll be great to see if we can blood some of these young players over the next couple of games, when we are going to have shortfalls with injuries, because we've got a small squad, we're already plagued by injuries. If we get through this sort of schedule of four games in what is effectively 10 days without any more, that'll be a miracle. A Christmas miracle if we can get no more injuries. So I think realistically we'll have to see some young players. But I think even though that might hurt us a bit in this running, hopefully they can be helped by the senior players that we've still got. And hopefully that'll be a benefit in the back end of the season and into next year, when with the budget we're going to have, young players are going to form a much bigger part of our squad next season.
Mm, indeed. It is definitely the way forward for AFC Wimbledon. And I love it, George, when you talk about the youth, because you speak about it with so much passion. Just quickly, two games between AFC Wimbledon and Tranmere, of course, since the Reformation.
Yes.
Two draws.
Yes.
Can you remember them?
Oh, there was... I do think... Akinfenwa scored in the away game.
He did.
Was that a 2-2?
That was a 1-1. George Green with a 90th minute equaliser for Tranmere on that day. And at home on the 25th of October 2014, it was 2-2. Who got the goals that day?
Oh, I've got no idea.
Come on, George. You're supposed to be stato.
Yeah, I'm disappointed in myself that I can't remember these.
I'm disappointed in you, in fact. Jack Smith and Bayo, again with the goals for AFC Wimbledon. And a brace for a certain current Blackpool frontman.
Yeah, like I said, Tranmere are one of these teams we've got a dodgy record against. I mean, two games, two draws. Realistically, we need to end that run. We need to get a win against them. Because if we go into Christmas 6 points clear over it, it leaves us in a promising position. And with games against Bristol Rovers, who knows what they're at like at the moment over their managerial situation. Oxford, I think, I've got a feeling we'll turn up because of their manager. We normally turn up against their manager. Absolutely no idea why we turn up against
him. Is there no rhyme nor reason for that? Of course, he returned to one of his old clubs and didn't get the result.
Yes,
at the weekend.
There is absolutely no reason why we perform better and our fans and players are more up for it against Oxford due to their manager.
Fair enough.
We've then got Southend, and Southend are just... If the saying in League One at the moment is, if you can't beat Southend, you'll lose every game. Mm. And I think Southend, realistically, will be too early for them to spend stupid money like they normally do in January. So if we can get a result there, I've just noted down that if we can get 7 points from this sort of four games between now and the Southend game on New Year's Day, that puts us in a great position to try and build a bit of momentum, try and get as many points clear of the bottom three as we can. Because like I said, I think we'll lose Force, we'll lose Delaney, we'll lose Sanders potentially. And like I said, with West Ham's situation in goal, who knows what they're thinking behind Nathan Trott is. We could lose the spine of our team in January.
I think the likelihood will be that West Ham would more than likely dip into the market rather than recall Nathan Trott, I would say.
I was just wondering whether they'd recall him as a sort of a backup option.
Mm. Potentially, I suppose, potentially. OK, George, we are into the final minute. Are you with me next week?
I don't know who is.
OK, well, if you're not, we are nearly at the end of 2019. A quick summing up of your year in AFC Wimbledon.
It's been a very long year with more lows than ups, but the ups have been incredible.
Lovely stuff. That was George Jones of the 9 Years podcast there. And this has been the AFC Wimbledon Fan Show. Tranmere Rovers next week, Saturday the 21st of December. Will it be a relegation Christmas cracker? We do indeed hope so, with 3 points to the Dons. We'll see you next week at 8 p.m.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.